Hello everyone, this is Learning Together, another Learning Together session on a Sunday. We're having them all kinds of days now. We just had one with Shelley Terrell on Friday, and next Monday we're going to have a session. Tyson Seaburn is going to come to us from Toronto, but this one is a traditional Sunday session that Claire Siskin and Mark Siskin have graciously decided to put on for us on live code. Live code for everyone. So you've been wowed by Claire's latest projects, and now she's going to wow us again with live code. This is Sunday, April 28th, 2013. I always like to mention the date. So thanks a lot, Claire. Nice to see you and everybody else here. I guess maybe we'll have some people introduce themselves briefly and just to say who's here.
Okay, well, why don't you introduce yourself, Vance?
Didn't I do that? Okay, I'm Vance Stevens in Abu Dhabi.
I don't think so.
And you can find these podcasts, Learning Together podcasts, are all being caringly reconstructed at learningtogether.net. I'll put that in the text chat at some point. But anyway, and other than that, we're at webheads.info. So that's me. Next.
Okay, João.
I am João. I am a retired computer trainer, and but still a teacher training. I live in Portugal, near Lisbon, and that's all. And I want to learn something about life code.
Okay, great. So let's see, I'm just going in the order that, that people appear in the box. What about Nina?
I'm Nina Yakos. I'm outside Washington, D.C. in Maryland. I teach at the University of Maryland. I'm a webhead. And I haven't been here for a few weeks or maybe a month or so, but I'm getting back into the groove. And I do not have a mobile device. I cannot do this live code. I have no idea what it is, but I love you all, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, Nina, you don't need to have a mobile device to do live code. You can do it from your computer. Okay, I'm just going in the order here. Okay, Phil.
And if called on, you can always type something in the text chat, and we'll read it to everybody. Is your mic working, Phil? That's, by the way, Phil Cousins, living now in Macau. And he was living in the UAE, where we worked in the same university. So any more to add to that, Phil?
Maybe we should go on to Teddy. And then, Phil, if you get your mic working later on, you can let us know.
Everyone, I'm Teresa in the Lisbon area in Portugal, and I'm married to João, who just introduced himself. I'm a retired EFL teacher. I'm an active webhead, and now also belong to a small group called Radical English, where I'm developing a project I started 10 years ago with my students, bridging the L1 and the L2. To help make pronunciation, English pronunciation, easier for students. So I use the sounds of Portuguese to help them pronounce words correctly. So Claire, this may be useful to you if you ever go to Angola.
Sounds wonderful. Okay. All right. I realized that Mark, whose name is up at the top, never got a chance to introduce himself. So Mark.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mark. I'm Claire's husband and her techie. I do work with all sorts of things, including live code at the university I work at, and I look forward to talking to you about how live code can be used not only on mobile devices, but on computers and even on a server at some point.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Yeah, Nina's commenting that it's nice to have a techie. I basically couldn't do most of the stuff that I do without Mark. I'm the one who likes to talk. Those of you who know me know that I like to talk, and Mark is the one who does the thinking while I do the talking. Okay, Vance, shall I go ahead and launch into the topic? Shall I go ahead and get started?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, fine. Well, our topic today is live code. It's here. It's free. It's for everybody. The two main points that I want to make are that live code is really cool. Some of you have heard me talk about this over the years, but it used to be called Revolution. So all the comments that I used to make about Revolution are still true of live code. And it's now free, which is a very important point, because a commercial license for live code, the price has varied by the year, the different pricing structures, but right now it's $500 for a commercial license. The fact that it's gone open source, I think, is really important. Okay, so first I'm going to talk to you about what live code is, what it can do, and that's going to be really brief. The fact that it's now open source. We're going to do a kind of a demonstration, although it's not really going to be a live demonstration. We're going to do it with screenshots, and then hopefully there'll be time for questions and discussion. Please feel free to type something in the chat window or say whatever you like, and go ahead and ask questions as we go along. Okay, there is a web page that goes with this. The web page is in the, I put that link into the Learning Together thing, but I have links to a lot of different resources for our live code there. Okay, so basically what is live code? It is software. It is software that runs on a computer. It's not web-based. It runs on a computer. It used to be called Revolution, as I said. The name of the company is RunRev, which is Runtime Revolution. So they haven't changed all the URLs, all of the websites. So you will see that a lot of the websites have .runrev or .rev, but it's still live code. Okay, so basically you can use this software to create a lot of language learning activities. From that web page, I have links to my templates, and you can go and download those, and you can get a lot of ideas. They're not really completed programs, but they're just templates for ideas. It's very easy to incorporate text, pictures, audio, video. You can connected to a database. The last project I did at the University of Pittsburgh, the students would get a task, record audio, all the audio files would go to the server. It was connected by a database. So there are lots of different ways it can be used. Compared to most programming languages, it's extremely easy to use. Somebody like me can actually create things in live code. The main reason I like it is that I have a lot of freedom. I can move things around on the screen. I can change just about everything in it. How many of you used to play with modeling clay when you were children? See, raise your hand if you know how to do that. Did you used to like to play with modeling clay? Okay. Yeah, I don't know. That used to be one of my most enjoyable things. Yes, Teddy, I think you could use it to create an directory. I think it's to me, it's the nearest I've found with technology to playing with modeling clay, because I have the freedom to make the screen look the way I want to, and I can move things around easily. So I'm very, very fond of it. It's very enjoyable, for me at least, to work with live code. Okay, so this is a very old piece of software. It's, I think, at least we figured out 25, 26 years old. It started out as a Macintosh-only product in the 1980s. It evolved into Revolution, which worked on both Mac and PC, and now it's called Live Code. It also works on Linux, by the way. Okay, so if you hear about HyperCard, a lot of old HyperCard people really love it, and then it became more popular with Revolution, and now it's called Live Code. But it's basically the same product. Okay, so to actually create things in Live Code, You create things on a computer. You don't actually create it with a mobile app or a tablet. So you could use a PC or a Macintosh or Linux. And what you're going to do is create what is called a stack. And it's called a stack. The metaphor of stack has to do with cards. Each screen is basically a card. So you would use a computer to actually do the creation of whatever you're making. Okay, but then once you have created this stack, you can run it and all these different devices. In a very limited way, you can even run it on a server. You can run it from your iPhone, your iPad, your Android, your computer. You can certainly a Kindle. It'll run on a Kindle Fire. It runs on all these different devices. So you just have to make it. You can use one of these three to actually do the creation, but once it's created, then you can deploy it or run it on all these different devices. So it, as you can see, it's a great time saver. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about crowdfunding. Are you all familiar with this term? I know Vance is, and I had to look up the definition. Crowdfunding, this happened a couple of weeks ago in the Boston Marathon when these poor people were injured. I think within one day they had already raised $1 million, and now there's this big government effort, and I think they've raised over $20 or $30 million. Okay, basically you go to the internet, you go to a website, and you say, I will donate X amount of dollars. Well, at the beginning of this year, in January, LiveCode announced a crowdfunding effort, because over the years, people have been saying, this software is never going to be very widely used or very popular because it costs money, so we need to make it free. So there was a crowdfunding effort to make LiveCode free, and here's what happened, okay? There's a website called Kickstarter where all these projects are. The company was asking for £350,000, which is about $600,000, something like that. Yeah. And it was interesting. They said, we need to have 1 month in order to raise this money. That was the deadline. For the first 3 weeks, not very much happened. Things kind of moved along slowly, and Mark and I were trying to decide, are we going to give money, are we not going to give money? The last week, everything kicked in, and they actually have raised, to date, they have raised £493,795, and that is, what, $700,000 or something? Yeah, it's $750,000. And I have, if you go to the RunRev website, I have a link from that webpage, and click on the Kickstarter, it's really interesting to see all the comments of the people. There are over 1,000 comments from people all over the world. As of yesterday, a total of 3,342 people from all over the world, many of them in Europe. By the way, LiveCode is much more popular in Europe than it is in the United States. All these people have given money. Many of them are teachers. Not all of them are teachers, but many of them are. And they're really excited about this. And Mark and I are extremely excited about this. And right now, we don't really have a whole lot of money because I don't have a job, but we actually gave, for us anyway, a significant amount of money for this because we thought that this effort was so important. May you web tour that website. Oh, that one, yeah. That's the main page for that.
Shall I put a web tour up? Will it be okay?
Why don't you do that at the end? Why don't you do that at the end? Because I have another slide about that at the end. It might make more sense.
Okay.
But anyway.
Anyone can click on that link in the text chat.
Okay. Good enough. And that web page is also in the Learning Together. I put it there last night. Okay. So anyway, this to us is extremely exciting. And so for this extra money, the difference between the starting goal and what they actually raised, the CEO of the company offered a lot of enhancements, and some of them are Unicode, so the people who want to program in Arabic or Chinese or whatever can do it more easily. They're going to put in audio recording. They're going to put in a lot of the things that are really very important for us language people. Okay, so anyway, this is really exciting. Okay, so now we're going to attempt to do a demo, and one of the things that you can find on that webpage is a link to my templates. And this is something I started back in the HyperCard days, and I've showed this at TESOL a number of times. I've showed this at other conferences like Calico. I've done workshops on this, and those are just some very simple templates to give people an idea of what you can do with live code. And now my husband is going to start talking, and he's going to show you, he's going to go through the process of taking this stack and making it into an app.
Okay, thank you, Claire. If you go on to the next slide. Okay, in order to create an app, which is something that can be used on a mobile device like tablets or phones, you have these steps. You create the stack, the file, on your computer. You test the stack using a simulator for the device, either an iOS device or an Android device. Then you convert the stack to an app, which is something that can be used on the device. Then transfer that app to the mobile device, test it, and then if it works, you submit it to the App Store for either Apple's App Store or Google Play for the Android devices. The demonstration that we're going to do is going to show all the things that are in orange on this slide. So, first thing, next, we created a stack. This is, as Claire described, a stack that we did back when we were using HyperCard. It's relatively simple. You choose a picture and you click on the next button.
Yeah, so, actually, I think that this particular one I did and uploaded in 1994. So it's pretty old.
Okay. And when you click on the next, the activity is you ask, where is the pretzel? And then you click on the various pictures and they'll tell you whether you're right or whether you're wrong. So, for example, you clicked on the cactus and said, no, it's a cactus. You click on the pretzel, and you get, yes, it's a pretzel. This is very simplistic. It's just an idea of how you can use live code to create learning activities. Next. So, what you do is, within live code, you start the simulator. This is the Apple iOS simulator, and you'll notice that there are two icons at the top of it. The one in the right-hand side is the app that I just created. So you click on that, and next. This is the stack that I created running in the simulator. So you click on next or touch it if they had a touch device. You go on to the next, and here it is working on the simulator. So you know that it works the way the simulator says it's going to work. So once you've proven that, you go on to the next step where you convert the stack to an app. This screen shows you some of the settings that you can do. Don't worry about this. You really don't need to do anything on the screen except maybe put a icon picture in, and you just go on, you go ahead and create this app, and then you're ready to go on to the next step. You connect your computer to your, in this case, my iPad, and transfer the app to it. I'm using software that's available from Apple for free called Xcode, but to transfer the app to your device, you need to be a member of Apple's iOS developer community, and we'll discuss that later. But anyway, here we're transferring the Picture Choice app to the iPad. And now, this is my iPad before the transfer, and after the transfer, you'll notice that I've added a new icon. It's called Picture Choice, and it's there in the bottom, in the middle. And it's transferred over to the mobile device, and now, once it's on the mobile device, next, you can run it. And That's me holding my iPad, showing you the app running. Next. Okay, now to get your app to other people, you have to submit it to the App Store. And like I said, we'll discuss how to do it with Apple for coming up. For Google, there's another process, but it is pretty straightforward for the Google. So that's the basic steps on how to get from a stack to a device. Next.
Okay. This distribution story is a good news, bad news story, okay? As you know, anything with Apple, there's always going to be some bad news. With Google Play, in other words, if you are making an app to run on an Android or something for Kindle Fire, etc., you can do this whole process completely for free. Okay? If you're doing this with Apple, you're going to have to become an Apple developer. And that is a good news, bad news scenario. The bad news is that to become an Apple developer, you have to pay Apple $100. That's the bad news. The good news for this is that it can be a group of people. For example, Mark works at Carnegie Mellon University, and his campus has paid that, and so he doesn't have to pay it. You know, it's like it can be, in theory, it could be, I guess, a few thousand people, you know, have paid for this one license. Okay, so that's the bad news scenario on that. They are working with Apple to figure out how things are going. It has to do with copyright. It has to do with the type of GPL or open source license that they have. But so right now, none of those details have been worked out because this just happened. This product just became open source on April 9th. So this is extremely recent. So that is the bad news about Apple, and I wish I could tell you that it would be totally free. However, you can create the software and you could upload it to your website, and you could download and use it on a computer or on a laptop. And in fact, if any of you would like to develop something in live code, I'll be happy to put it on my website. So that's the good news, bad news scenario on that. Now, if you want to develop something for Android or for a Google type tablet, you should be aware. I just saw a comment on Facebook the other day. Yes, it's free, but apparently there is a danger of viruses and things like that. One of my friends who's a Mac user just said, well, people criticize Apple, but at least there is some form of protection. At least up to now, nobody has uploaded an app and distributed viruses to several thousand people, which has happened with Google, right? So, there's nothing, I think, in the world of technology that is totally free of danger, but those are some considerations to think about. Okay, so this web page, let me go briefly. We're doing really well on time. I thought this would take an hour. I'm going to go. Can you all see this page here? If you want to download, okay, here's the basic website. Are you all seeing this? Is everybody seeing the web page?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. So this is the basic website. If you wanted
to... Let's articulate it for the recording.
Okay.
It's www.edvista.com. /clairclaire/rev/.
Okay. If you're making this into a podcast, that's an excellent idea, Van. Thank you. Okay. So you don't want me to read every URL, do you? Hopefully not. Yeah. But the first link that I have there is
only the really important ones.
Okay. I think the second one might be equally important, which is the place where you can go and download the open source. Okay, so there it is. You can download it, and that's got all the information there. They're not seeing my web browser? Oh, okay, so now can you see it? Mark? Okay, what are you seeing?
You're still on slide 29 of 31.
Okay. You're not seeing the web tour.
Since we have multiple moderators, Oh, you have to click it in. I'm not sure. I've got follow moderator clicked in on my computers. Follow moderator. Yeah, click follow moderator and see if you can grab that. I'm not sure why.
What is that under?
You see where it says 29 of 31 and it has the name of your slide? Just to the right of that, it should say follow moderator in Rome.
Oh, yes.
You click follow moderator. Mm-hmm.
So should I click on Rome?
No,
yes,
you should click on follow moderator and we should follow you.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter that much. Oh, hi, Rita, by the way. Nice to see you. Rita, I'm going to see you in Scotland. I bought my ticket a couple of days ago, so I'll be seeing you there. Let me just describe some of the things that are on the web page, since we do have some time. The community is very active. It's really a community of practice, in some ways similar to Webheads, because people are very generous about their time and about helping people. There is a lot of information available on the internet about live code. There is a YouTube channel that I checked there yesterday. It has 41 videos. There's a fellow who teaches a course at Brigham Young University who has a whole programming page with a lot of help. If you have a very old HyperCard stack and you want to convert it, there's a tutorial for that. There are a lot of different things. I wrote a tutorial some time ago called the Audio Tutorial for Live Code, because those of you who know me know that I love audio, and it was very important to me to get the audio to work, and I didn't think the documentation was very clear, so I made a tutorial for that, and you can go and download that. I also, a lot of people at Calico are very interested in data collection and how to get live code or how to get various software programs to collect data from learners. And so I did a session at Calico a few years ago called Revolution, which is what it was called then, Revolution for Low-Cost Data Collection. There is a very, very active mailing list, a listserv, and you might get 30 messages a day or 40 messages a day. So I put that on digest. So I just get a couple of messages a day. It's extremely useful, and because the community of Live Code lives all around the world, similar to Webheads, if you post a question about how to do something, I think the longest I ever waited to get an answer was maybe 35 minutes, because there's always somebody awake and working with Live Code around the world. You can also search the archives of the messages. There are also forums, and now there's also a Facebook group. Actually, there are several Facebook groups for Live Code. There are a lot of other different things. There are people who write enhancements. You might expect, if you want to see something really beautiful, check out Tactile Media. There's an artist who lives in Silicon Valley in California, and he designs enhancements for Live Code and does a lot of really beautiful things. At the very bottom of the page, you will find my templates, and you're welcome to go and download those. If you design something cool and would like to add it to my page, send me your stack, and I'll be very happy to add it. Red Hot Words is another program that was written in Revolution, actually, but it works on Live Code as well. So that basically is the information that I have available on this page. I did check all the links last night and update them. There's a nice video there at the very top section called What Do You Love About Live Code? It's a nice video. They do have conferences. In fact, they're going to have a conference in May in Scotland, which I won't be able to attend. When it used to be called Revolution, they used to have a yearly conference in California, which I attended a few times, which was really, really nice. It's a very nice community. Oh, one more thing that I wanted to say about Live Code. Who invented the World Wide Web? Certainly Vance knows, at least.
Tim Berners-Lee.
Exactly. Okay. And he actually worked with a colleague of his whose name was Robert Calliau. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Calliau. Well, when if you have read Berners-Lee's book, which is called Weaving the Web, about how they came up with the idea for the World Wide Web, it came from HyperCard. It was having two things. It was having the ability to click on a link, to have hyperlinks, okay, and also the connectivity of the Internet. And it was basically the combination of the Internet and HyperCard that gave him the idea. One of the co-developers of the web, who was Robert Calliau, goes to the Live Code conference every year, and I've heard him speak. So anyway, it's interesting that really the history of the web as we know it today has one of its ancestors is HyperCard. So a lot of this power and a lot of this ability to do things and to move from place to place is incorporated in this program. So that's an interesting historical link. Okay, so this is the end of our formal presentation. It looks like we have a great deal of time for questions. I guess we could do some more. I thought this would take a lot longer than an hour. But if you have questions, let's start with that. If not, we can other things. João.
Yeah.
That's Nina raised a hand.
Nina.
Can you hear me now? I guess you showed one example of a little vocabulary exercise that you would create. So I guess I was hoping that people would brainstorm and talk about other things that you might do using the software, because I'm particularly uncreative and don't easily come up with ways to use it.
This might be a good time to put your page up as a web tour, and then you could click on the links on that page and take us to show us things. Is that a good idea?
I thought that I was doing that before, but I could try. I clicked on that before. Okay, I'm going to click. Now do you see the page? Mark, do you see it? No. Okay. It doesn't seem to be working, but let me could I just describe some of the things? That's probably better for a podcast anyway. Nina, I hear exactly what you're saying, and that's why I made a bunch of templates to give teachers ideas. For example, one of the templates has a lot of ideas for dictations, ways to create a live code stack to basically that where students could hear something and type into it, and how they could do that, how they could email the results to the teacher, etc. The one that's probably the best known is one called Karaoke Conversation, which I've shown at TESOL a few times, and this is where students have, there's a conversation between students, and then the learner can record his or her own voice and sort of enter into that conversation. There are two stacks which are called listening tasks, which have various ways of having people having people listen to something and then click on the right answer, or there's a couple of drag and drop exercises. Picture choice, you've seen. There's one that Mark and I did, I think, in 1995 called The Messy Desk, which is a dialogue and has comprehension question. There are some multiple choice ones to show different types of multiple choice. There is one called Type Your Answer that shows different ways to handle text where learners are writing in their answer. There's also a vocabulary lesson. And this is one, that is one that you might, Teresa, you might want to download that one. It might be useful for your e-dictionary, where it gives the different forms of the word and gives a definition. There's one called What's Happening, where they have to look, I don't remember, I haven't looked at that one for a while. They have to look at a picture and interact in various ways. But it's not too difficult to set up multiple choice. It's easy to set up drag and drop, where you can, like I have one where they click on a button and it says, put the flower, it's a picture of a flower, and it says, put the flower in the garden. And they have to drag the picture of the flower over to the garden. And then it says, put the camera on the bench. And it has various ones. So this is exactly, I think, that would address your question, Nina. You'd have to download Live Code first. But you could download, I've got the link here on this page, you could download the templates and play with them. And then probably after that you would have a lot of questions, and then what you would probably want to do is go back to the Live Code website and get some more basic information. In the past at TESOL, we have done quite a few workshops. I think I can remember doing a HyperCard workshop at TESOL in the early 1990s, long time ago. And we've done these at our language lab conferences. Mark and I personally have done 4 workshops on it, I think. And so Mark just did a workshop on this last week at Cornell University, showing how to go from a stack to an app. So does that answer your question, Nina? These are only a few ideas, really.
Nina? Other things that can be done with Live Code, I'm actually creating research instruments for our graduate students at Carnegie Mellon, and they have people read texts and record responses. We've had people do timed studies where they would show stimulus and the student would respond, and we time how long it took them to respond, what they responded. So there's a lot of things that can be done with Live Code in addition to the strictly drill practice and other learning activities.
As a research tool, it's really excellent because you can have them record, you can give them a time limit for their recordings, you can actually record all of their mouse clicks. When I was a graduate student at Michigan State, I did a project like that when it was still called HyperCard, where every time I wanted to see, okay, if you give the learners an audio file, will they really listen to it, and will they listen to it repeatedly? Because one of the claims that we make in call is that students, that we want to give learners control over what they're doing, and we give them all these wonderful affordances like definitions of words, explanations of grammar, audio, video. But my question has always been, okay, just because we give these abilities to the learner, is the learner actually going to use them? And so I was actually able to go back and say, and I think I had 162 students in the study, how many students actually listened to the audio for each segment, and how many how did they listen to it more than once? And that was really interesting. And if you give the students extra feedback, what kind of feedback is good? Is it just yes, you're right, no, you're wrong? Or if you give them a grammar, an explanation, will they really click and find out why their answer was wrong, and will they really use these abilities? So there's a lot that you can do with Live Code to track what learners are actually doing. Nina, did that answer your question at all?
Yes, very much so, Claire and Mark. And I was curious as to what you found when you investigated whether the students were using the resources that you had given them.
Actually, it was quite amazing in terms of, okay, what I wanted to know was, will students do the extra click to find out why their answer was right or wrong, either right or wrong? What percentage of students do you think would make an extra click? Why don't you all type in your prediction? Nobody's typing. If you give students an opportunity to click, to make one extra click and get an explanation, how many students will take advantage of that? Oh, let's see. 60%. I hadn't scrolled down. Okay, 60%, 5%, Van said. 30%. 20, 10%, it was actually something like 93%, which nobody, yeah, I published that. If you look back at my Vita online, you could see that. But yeah, it was actually quite amazing. I was very surprised myself, yeah. But that was a long time ago. Yeah, that was something I actually showed at WorldCall in Australia in 1998. So this has been a long process, but anyway, well, I agree with you, Nina, we are jaded because we kind of think that they won't make that extra effort. Although some people would say, well, a mouse click is not much effort, and they're right, of course. It's not as much effort as sending an email, or it's less effort than raising your hand in class. Okay, and I agree with you, Nina, that a lot of students probably wouldn't, but others would. But of course, you have to remember that there's a kind of an impersonal characteristic to making a mouse click in the privacy of my own computer. Isn't much effort, and nobody else knows about. Raising my hand in class is very different. That could be very threatening. That could be frightening. You know, people might laugh at me. Yeah, I agree with you, Rena. That requires courage, especially if I'm dealing with not my own language, or if I think there are people in the class who are not supportive, or if I think the teacher is not supportive. So. There are a lot of different dynamics that go into that, whereas clicking on a mouse is much less effort. But so, and you know, you can say that that's good or bad. You know, that there are different dynamics of that. So this would have been my dissertation topic if I'd ever done a dissertation. And that's very interesting. Yeah. Okay. But it's one of the great appeals, but I think it's also a danger. Are we making things too easy for them? Okay. Other questions?
There's so many other factors, you know. I mean, not just cultural ones, but you know, the kind of, I mean, whether the research we did at one time could be just totally overturned by the social networking kinds of things we can do these days, and have these you know, much cleaner interfaces, much more. I mean, you might even get, you got 93%, maybe you get 97% with similar kind of software now, or you know, I mean, it depends so much on who the students are, and how motivated they are, and how credible they think the software is, and how easy it is for them to get the information that's actually relevant to them.
I think that's a really interesting point. That research was done in 1997, and so most of the students then didn't even have email. Or a lot of them didn't have email. Only a few of them did, and I actually think that if this were somehow tied into social networking, and if they thought that other people could see their performance, it might have been a lower percentage. I don't know, but I also want to address what you said about a cleaner interface. One of the things that I really love about Live Code is that I can completely, and I'm a control freak. Those of you who know that about me. I like to be able to determine everything on the screen. I don't like to have a lot of advertisements. I don't like to have blinking. I don't like to have, like, the fact that every time I go on Facebook, it tells me, it shows me a picture of a jacket or something that I looked at before. So it's kind, you know, it's always trying to get me to buy something, and things are blinking, and the nice thing about Live Code is that I can completely control what that screen looks like, you know, for good or for bad. Hi, David, nice to see you. So, but that's an interesting point. But you're right that having social media in this would have made it very different. Another aspect about that study, I gave them a paper questionnaire after they had worked with the software. They worked with the software in two sessions. And it had a vocabulary section, it had a grammar section, and it had a listening section. And I asked the students which section they liked best. And their answers were very, very interesting and very revealing. This, by the way, was second semester Spanish. I wanted to use a very homogeneous population. And we had many, many sections of second semester Spanish, so I used them. And so a lot of students said, I didn't like the grammar because that's all we ever do in class is grammar. Other students said, I love the grammar, and apparently this was supposed to be a communicative course, but in fact they were being graded just using grammar. And some of them said, we love the grammar because it helps us prepare for the tests in class. So they liked it because they thought it was going to help them get a good grade. Some of the students said that their favorite section was listening. Many of them had teaching assistants or instructors who were not native speakers of Spanish. And that was one of the most surprising aspects. Many of them said, we love this program because we got to hear native speakers, because I had recorded native speakers' voices for the listening. So it was interesting to hear the different comments that the students made about it. A lot of them were totally unexpected. Okay, other questions? And David is talking.
When are you going to give that presentation? The one on your research? That'll be your next one, I hope.
I gave that at Calico, and I gave it at World Call. There is a write-up about this in the Calico proceedings. Do you have the Calico proceedings from probably 1998 or 1999?
They don't have these online. The recent ones are online.
Are you kidding? I actually have that. So if you don't have the printed copy, if you're really interested, send me an email. I'll look for it. I think I have that on a CD-ROM someplace, because at one time Calico made a CD-ROM with the proceedings. And the reason I know this, do you remember Ruth Sanders? She was in Germany. She needed a reference, and so I was actually able to email it to her because I got it from the CD-ROM. But, yeah, I've done quite a few presentations on this, actually. And whenever I do, especially when I taught my call class at the University of Pittsburgh, we always had an evening devoted to call research, and I used to tell them the results there. But, yeah, I did that in Melbourne, Australia. You were there, 1998. And I did it at Calico, but I don't remember which year. I don't know if I ever reported that at TESOL. I've done several sessions about live code at TESOL, but when I started doing that, it was called HyperCard, and then after that, I did sessions with HyperCard, and then I did sessions with Revolution. I haven't done anything with live code because I've been doing mostly web-based things recently. And frankly, I have been very much away from live code for the last 3 years because I was working on the ESL WoW project, which was totally web-based. My husband has continued working with live code in his job at the university, mostly designing research instruments for the graduate students there. Now I have a little more free time since I'm not working. And also, I've just been tremendously excited by the news that live code is now open source. To me, this is a game changer. This is a major thing. I really wish that Apple was not charging to get things into iTunes, and that's a sticking point, I realize. But, you know, if you do it on Android, you can do the whole process completely free. And also,
is there an online? Go ahead. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. But I was just wondering if there was an online, I mean, I just, from the templates you had, they have to be downloaded. Is there something that works in a browser as well?
No, there was a short time when, this may be a showstopper for some of you. There was a short period of time, I think it was about 2 or 3 years, right, Mark, when you could run live code from a browser, but there was a plug-in. You had to get a plug-in, sort of like Flash as a plug-in. You can't do that anymore because the current browsers have made this impossible for security reasons. Because the problem with plug-ins, of course, is that it lets people get access to your computer. So there is no longer a plug-in that works. Yes, it's RunRev. Yes, that's right. So if you are one of these people who has to run everything from a browser, it's not going to work. But you can now run it on your smartphone or on your tablet. I can't see us getting back to the point where it could run from a browser. Can you, Mark? Who knows? Although Mark has been able to run it from his server. He's developed some instruments, but I don't know if that's really relevant to this discussion because most of you don't run your own servers. Is there a Java version? Mark, is there a Java version?
Nope. No. One thing that is good about live code is that it doesn't use the architectures that people are using that are being sort of reduced. Java's sort of going away because of all the security issues, so that new software generally tries to avoid using Java, but Going to the server issue, right now you can do many things on the server, but you can't do any of the user interface type things. You can't have buttons that move across the screen. That may be a future activity now that live code is open source and people can contribute. But right now, you can do text manipulation, you can do branching, you can make choices and do things like that on the server. You just can't put up a button and say, click here and get a response.
Okay. I'm so glad that Mark is here to answer these technical questions. So.
Yeah, but on the other hand, for an app environment, for a mobile environment, it sounds ideal. I mean, if you're not running through a web browser, you just want to run it off your mobile device, that's perfect, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, if we could just not have to pay $100. But the thing about this $100 is that it doesn't have to be $100 per developer. It can be for, you know, in Mark's case, Mark was going to pay this $100 for his lab, and he went to the licensing people at his university, and they said, oh, you don't have to pay that. We already have a license. And so he just uses their license. So it's not as bad as it could be, I guess, yeah. There are a lot of uses of live code that go outside universities, by the way. A lot of people use it for accounting, for databases. The entire University of Vienna in Austria is run on live code. I mean, all of their administration stuff, their record keeping, the grading, everything is done completely, which is really kind of strange, but I find it so. If I go to a Revolution or a live code conference, I will see maybe four or five language people. Most of the people there are programmers. A lot of graphic designers really like it. They use it to drive video. They use it to drive audio. There is, however, a program in Europe called Eurotalk. You may run across that. And it's a company that designs, it was language learning software for computers, now they design apps. And I'm amazed, I'm going to Scotland in July, and so I've been researching Scotland, and I discovered that they have made an app for Scottish Gaelic. They have all these different languages, and all of this stuff is based on live code. And there are starting to be more apps in the App Store that are made with live code. So anyway. That's that. Other questions? It definitely takes some time at the beginning to learn how to do it. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's all that easy, you know, at the beginning. I have done a lot of workshops like that karaoke conversation template that I told you about. I've done a lot of workshops for multiple languages, and I've had teachers in the session, in like a two-hour workshop, they can go in there and learn how to modify it. And I've had people make conversations and record the audio. I've had them do German. I've had them do Catalan. I've had them do Japanese. I've had them do a lot of languages in addition to the commonly taught languages such as French, Spanish. So it is possible. The reason I made the templates is because I don't think that most language teachers have time to develop something from scratch. So they can easily take one of those templates and modify it. I don't expect that anybody would like those templates, but they could take one of those templates and modify it according to their own proceedings. I don't have a reference for this, but I remember when I was in grad school reading of a research project that showed that when students use software that their own classroom teachers developed, that it's much more useful, which is common sense, I think. Obviously, the classroom teacher knows the students, they know the strengths, they know the weaknesses, and they can base it on exactly what those students need and make it custom made. And to me, that's one of the big advantages of something like live code. Although I remember, Vance, many years ago, didn't you write an article about the question is not can teachers develop their own software, but will they? Do you remember that? Vance, are you there?
Yes. I had to cut Mark off. He had the extra mic.
Okay.
Yeah, no worries. I'm trying to think what that article was about. That would have been a very long time ago. Yeah, will they?
It was
they?
A very
not
long time
they,
ago.
Will they? Yeah.
But it will follow you and haunt you for the rest of your academic career.
It's just come back as you predicted.
Okay, and to provide counterpoint to what Claire was just describing about the code, yes, you do have to learn it, but the language is not esoteric. You don't have to worry about whether you need a curly bracket here and a quote here, or, well, quotes, yes, but parentheses and all that. It's basically English-like. So you can look at the code and understand basically what's going on. You may have to look up some of the terms in the dictionary that's provided, but it's not something where you look at the code and then say, okay, there are two English words in here. You know, for the live code script, it's all in English, and the variables may be something you have to try to figure out. T variable. Maybe it's a temporary variable. So, yeah. I'm just going to answer an example. Claire says don't go into variables. So, anyway, you do have to learn it, but it is not something that is difficult to learn.
Yeah. For example, you saw in that template that Mark showed, it had next, and that was a button that you could click on and go to the next screen. And the script for that, the live code script, you could type in go next card, or you could type in go to the next card, or you could type in go to next card, and live code would understand all of those. So you think you all know what variables are. Vance, I'm not sure I always understand variables myself, but some people may be smarter than I am. But the code, as Mark was saying, the code is very English-like, and it doesn't take that much time to learn. I think that Nina's point about all of this taking time is very well taken, and we don't have a lot of time. The only way that I can justify the time in two ways. One is that once you have invested that beginning time in it, and once you have made something, then you have it for years. You have it for the next class and for the next class, and you can always go back and modify it. The other thing is that I find it very enjoyable. It's much more enjoyable than a lot of software programs or a lot of websites, because I have this ability to go in and change it and make it exactly the way I want to. As I said before, it's like playing. It's like playing with modeling clay. Oh, well, what will happen if I do this? What will happen if I do this? And and as Rita says, it is an investment. So, well, it's because I live in Pittsburgh. What's because I live in Pittsburgh? What? I'm not sure I get it. I'm too obtuse to get that, David. They're just a joke. Okay. But I would not, if it were something where I were cracking my head open and being frustrated every second, I wouldn't spend the time to do it. But because it's really pleasurable and because it makes me feel powerful, it makes me feel like, wow, I can actually get the computer to do what I want it to do, not just what it wants to tell me what to do. But I can make it do what I want to. Yes, cognitive surplus, exactly. I've had great enjoyment over the years. Those templates have been online, by the way. Some of them have been online since 1995, I think, and thousands of people have downloaded those. I don't know what they're doing with them, but they're there. So, and I'm very, dust them off, yeah, because you can, David, I think you came in too late for Mark's demonstration. That started with a HyperCard stack that I made in 1994, and I've got it's copyright, but it says in there that it's free to use or modify or do whatever you want to with it, and now he's got that running on an iPad, and I think that's pretty cool, that you could run that on an iPad, you could run it on the Kindle Fire, you could run it on anything. So to me, that's really exciting. That it's not, because so many things in call do become obsolete, dead, extinct, and we can't ever use them again. And this is something that there's been just enough interest in this over the years so that it's kept up. Tapped In. Oh, I wish we had Tapped In. I miss Tapped In. Like Vance, it would have been so nice to this morning. I was panicking because Vance wasn't here really early, and if I could have gone to Tapped In and found Vance, I would have felt better. I had to send him an email, which somehow doesn't seem like the same thing.
I've been thinking about that now that Tapped In is no longer there. Maybe we need to use Twitter more assiduously. You know, I should, because we can use the Learning Together hashtag. And make sure there's something posted on the Learning Together hashtag, so you know, at least you can Yeah, because it's answer Nina's question, how does TI translate to Twitter? I'm just going to flip off. Trying to get, there we go, okay. TI was a base, and if you hashtag in Twitter, it would be nice to just keep a conversation going on Learning Together, because what it does is once you've got a hashtag going, like hashtag Learning Together, then you can search on that hashtag, or if you see the hashtag, you can click on it, and you can get all the information about that. So what I need to do is be sure and post a day in advance so that there's always something for Learning Together. It doesn't really work if you post minutes in advance like I'm doing, but that might bring some people in on the spur of the moment. But if you post a day in advance, then people will know at least the time of the event. And that's in case you can't remember the website. John Hibbs always tells me he can never remember the name of the website. And right now, learningtogether.net doesn't link back because I haven't really, I've been, oh, I should give you the good news. The very good news is that I've got all the Learning Together events from 2009, including Teresa's. I actually put the embedded player in there now. When I mentioned it before, I had only a link to the sound file, but now there's a player. There's also a player for all the sound files from 2010 and all the ones from 2013 and 2012. And I'm working on 2011 now. And I've got a few days. I've got all the sound files on my computer, I think, but it's just useful to have posterous to refer to just in case something doesn't look quite right. But I've got a few days to work with Posterous, and that's what I'm doing, and everything's going back together quite nicely. I spent a bit of time on it yesterday, and I might spend time on it in the next couple of days in answer to Teresa's question. She can imagine the workload, she said. But it's not that bad. Once you get a pattern going, it's kind of like coding, you know, you just make it look right. So it all worked really well. I'm really pleased with WordPress. I found out on holiday in Melbourne that it was not going to be a real pain in the cole, as we said in Hawaii. But it kind of worked together where I just managed to. I was having trouble uploading all the sound files in Abu Dhabi, but in Melbourne, where they had decent bandwidth, it worked really well. I was able to get all the sound files down just to the backup, and once I got that, then I didn't really have any worries, as they say. Yeah. So anyway, but that's really nice. We haven't really lost anything, and I'm feeling very good about that. And then in a couple of days, I will no longer have to mess with it because Posterous will be gone. But that's one of those things, you know. You lose Tapton, you lose Posterous. We're losing Google Reader coming up. And we're losing Phil Cousins. He's going to bed, of all places.
Thanks so anyway, for joining us, Phil.
He gets to lie in a little longer than I do.
And, of course, Ning. Don't forget, Vance, in terms of things disappearing, there's Ning, and there's various Google products in addition to Reader have disappeared. Google Lively. Did anybody ever try Google Lively? It was I know people who spent a great deal of time developing curriculum around Google Lively, which was like a second life, and it disappeared. Google
Graham
Wave,
Davies was doing that.
Yeah, Google Wave
Google
disappeared.
Wave,
yeah, it was very popular for a while.
The EdTech crew has been addressing some of that because there is a new Google product out. What's it called? Does anybody know the name of it offhand? iGoogle? No. But anyway, it turns out that Google has, you can actually almost predict the shelf life of Google products, so, you know, you can't really count on them.
Really?
Yeah, well, they were discussing that on EdTech Crew, and how long the products were lasting over, you know, average time on a recent show. So, you know, because they do seem to bring them up and then kill them if they're not really working. to their mm-hmm. expectations. So, yeah.
Well, that's they put in another plug for LiveCode. That's what LiveCard has stuck around. Now, I was simplifying in my presentation. It was HyperCard, and then there was something called MetaCard. And then MetaCard turned into Revolution, and Revolution turned into LiveCode. In terms of the company, a guy in Scotland named Kevin Miller bought MetaCard when he was 19 years old. He's now in his 30s. Started the company when he was 19 years old, bought the MetaCard engine, and turned into Revolution. So that's kind of interesting. So it keeps changing names, but it keeps staying there, whereas Google keeps coming up with new stuff, and then it disappears very quickly. Yeah, SuperCard was a generic version. Although the products that you made with SuperCard were not interchangeable. The nice thing about all the different iterations of HyperCard is that you can take the older versions and still run them in the modern iterations. Yeah, but to me, SuperCard was very powerful. But to me, the major disadvantage of SuperCard was that it never ran on PC; it always ran on Mac. And so, whereas MetaCard and Revolution and LiveCard run on Mac, PC, and Linux, so. Oh, it was too cool. Yeah, David, absolutely. Although I have to tell you, the first time, that actually taught me a lesson. I attended a HyperCard workshop, I think, in 1988, and I had a terrible teacher. Didn't any of you ever have one of these teachers who is really sarcastic and criticizes you and makes you feel stupid? I was also learning how to use a mouse, and this guy would come around and look at my screen, and he would say, "How did you get there? How did you do that?" And I felt really afraid and really intimidated. And I didn't go near HyperCard for like 3 more years after that. And then I went to a conference and went to a workshop where somebody encouraged me and showed me that it was really easy. But I thought it was really good because it reminded me of what it's like for some of my own students and some of our own learners, that, you know, and how we have to be really careful not to make them feel that way. So, a major factor, absolutely, yes. But it made me feel that I couldn't do anything. Not only could I not do HyperCard, but I couldn't use a computer or use a mouse. Whereas, the next workshop I went to, the guy was very encouraging and showed me all the possibilities. Off topic, sorry. I overcame that, Nina, because I was inspired by the next person. The next person said, "Look, you can play a sound. Look, you can put in a picture. Look, you can do all this stuff." Any more questions? I think we're over our time.
Yeah,
I would still like advance if we...
Yes, go ahead.
I would like advance if we still had another TI, if we had another web-based place where we could all go and log in and meet. I would like that. I guess we could kind of do it on Facebook. You can have a group discussion, but it's not the same.
Can you do it in live code?
Actually, you can. I should go back and look at that because there used to be weekly chats. Somebody made a live code stack where you can do that. Mark, maybe you can put it on your server. We should look into that. What do you think, Mark? Are you listening? Yeah. He's looking at his computer. We'll look into that. I don't promise that anything will come of it, but we can certainly look into it. Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be something with a little traction. But, yeah, you're right. It would be nice to have a space that we could go to. Maybe I could just put up, it could be a Titan Pad or something like that. Just stick one up somewhere.
That's a good
and
idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would work.
David says we'll get Mark a new server. Actually, Mark, how many servers do you have? He has a bunch of servers. Five. He has five servers. Yeah, he loves it. And he's lucky that he works at a university where the IT people don't come in and interfere and put restrictions on. He's really lucky. He sort of can run his own show there. It's a perfect place for somebody like Mark who likes to mess around and play, and it's fun.
Yeah, we could probably keep a permanent place up in webheadsinaction.org/live because we just use those. I'll look into that as well. We'll see what we can develop stuff and see what happens with it. See what people like, what they go to.
Vance, maybe we could. Vance, I love this idea. Maybe we could get people to take turns being there to moderate, sort of the way David and BJ did for Tapped In. Do you like that idea?
Sure. I mean, anything that works, you know, people will actually do it, and I don't have to do it.
Well, good. I'll volunteer to do it. I'm sure that Nina and Rita and David, people volunteer to do it, sure.
Oh, wait, I came to Tapped In all the time. Not all the time, but I'd try to go there at noon GMT, you know, just to see who was there, and sometimes only one or two people, and sometimes no one. But,
It was a very good system because people would come to Tapped In and we could put in the URL and direct them to wherever we were because, you know, we might have been in Google Hangout or we might have been in Illuminate or we might have been in Adobe Connect or wherever. So it was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be good.
If there's a reliable place you can go and find out, you know, people would do that. People would drop in and say, what's the URL for today?
Yeah.
Right now I'm in Skype with Morteza. He's just he's caught me in Skype and he just asked me, where's the link? You know, where are you meeting? And
okay.
And Twitter seems to pull a few people in every now and then. You know, that usually works if you just tweet right before the event because you know how people's tweet streams are. It's got to be on the page they're looking at that moment.
But I don't think that's quite as easy to do as having a website where people can go to. The other thing, let me get back to this point of volunteering. A group of us could volunteer to be at this place because volunteering there doesn't mean that you have to dedicate yourself to that. You could just have it open and you could go there once in a while because you know you could be doing other things at the same time. You could be reading, you could be tweeting, you could be Facebooking, except for Rita who doesn't like Facebook and I share her concern about Facebook. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And here's Morteza.
Morteza, hi. Yeah. Now is Morteza the one who saw you at the TESOL Arabia?
Yeah, he took videos.
Yeah, that's cool.
And he's got he put a picture on Google Plus, and that's probably up at Facebook as well. Hi, Morteza, how are you?
You want to say something, Morteza?
I'm Morteza from Iran. I'm very happy to be in this room. Thank you very much.
We're very happy to have you. You're very welcome.
Yeah, Morteza was my house guest for an evening, and he was very pleasant company, and it was really nice to meet him. And Nina is going to go. She's going to catch up on a MOOC. Ha, that's the excuse du jour. Ha, ha, ha. We've heard that one before. Okay, but you have to tell us something about the MOOC before you go.
Yeah, this is my first MOOC. I've read several books by Kathy Davidson, and I was looking at her blog, and she mentioned a MOOC that was just about to start with Dan Ariely, who happens to be the author of two books that I wanted to read. One is called Predictably Irrational, and the other one is something about honesty and dishonesty. So I went to the website and signed up, and then only then realized that that was an old blog post, and the MOOC was in week 4 of a 6-week course. So I've had to pare down my expectations. Obviously, I'm not taking it for credit, but I'm not doing any of the readings and I haven't done any interaction, but what I've been trying to do to catch up is just listen to the lectures and take the quizzes on the lectures. And it's great. I'm also reading his books and I may go back if I ever manage to catch up. I just finished week 3, so I'm starting week 4 and they're starting probably week 5 or 6 now. So I'm doing the best that I can, but it's been a great experience, and the platform, it's on Coursera, the platform is great. So I'm off to start working on week 4. Thanks to everybody. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Vance. Nice to see everybody. See you next time.
Okay, well, maybe we should let Claire and Mark get on about their day as well. It's early morning in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania, wherever they are in that area. And this is the 28th of April, and we've been just enjoying a Learning Together session. And I'll leave the recording going until the recording gets silent, then I'll switch it off, and I'll wait for people to leave the room. People are starting to do that already. Don't mean to be running people away, but I have to be the last one out because that's when the recording gets made. And once it gets made, maybe in the morning, but at some point, I put it up at learningtogether.net, and it disappears from the wiki, and it's archived at learningtogether.net. And there should be an MP3 version, so you can play that if you want, download it. There'll be a download place, and you can also see the recording of the Illuminate session. So this has been, this is very informative about live code. We found out that it's a lot more widespread than we may have imagined and more useful, and we learned a lot about it, and the great breakthrough is that it's now open source. So thanks a lot for both of you coming on and informing us about this interesting software, which it's an extension of HyperCard, isn't it? So thanks for updating us on that.
Well, Vince, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. We really appreciate it. And thanks also for all the work that you do on behalf of WebDads, especially all this conversion. And I definitely think we should explore finding a common meeting area. That would be good. But of course, I think we should continue to use Twitter as well as part of this effort. But anyway, thank you very much. And I guess we're going to log off now. And it was a pleasure to see all of you here this morning.
Yeah, well, all of these efforts help, and then if you start six new things, perhaps two of them are really useful. So, yeah, anyway, well, thank you, and nice to see everybody. Hugs to Rita, and bye to Marteza, and Claire and Mark. See you next time.
Bye to all.